final speaker before we move into your time is Murray Dobbin, a friend of mine. And like I had to go to India to meet with Maud, we had to go to Toronto to bump into each other, having not seen each other for quite a while. Murray is prolific. He's been around the council for a long time. He's been around progressive political issues. His latest book, which you will want to pick up, Paul Martin, CEO for Canada. Murray is nothing if not timely, and that's not all he is. He's been a broadcaster, a writer, a stalwart of the free trade, anti-globalization struggle here in Vancouver and across the country for as long as I can remember. He's just an enormously talented man, a very gentle spirit, well thought, well spoken. Murray Dobbin, a very good friend.
Thanks, Jeff. That's very nice. So we've got
$5.
We've got deep integration. We've got full spectrum dominance. There's something sexually sick about this, isn't there? I don't know. I start to wonder about these guys if they don't need some serious therapy. Paul Martin. This guy's supposed to be an enigma, right? I mean, I don't understand the enigma. He's supposed to be sort of, you know, his father's son, Paul Martin Sr., who fought for Medicare, and then he's supposed to be a business liberal, and there's this internal struggle all the time, but it's a very short struggle. Sort of like driving through a prairie town. If you blink, you missed it. I don't think there's much of a struggle in Paul Martin at all. Paul Martin is a CEO, and when he has power, whether it's in a corporation or when it's in the finance department or prime minister, he behaves as a CEO. I think it's really important to understand that, because he does have a history when he was in opposition of being a very good environmental critic and being very good on social housing, and met probably, you know, 3/4 of the anti-poverty activists and environmentalists in the country in that time. Spoke very eloquently about both those issues. And then when he became finance minister, he cut the environment department by 45% and got rid of social housing altogether. Now, he's either an extremely good liar or he's a CEO, which, you know, there's a crossover there, which we all know about. But I think that's how we have to see Paul Martin. He's a CEO, and whatever values he may have when he walks in the door of the company, which is how he sees Canada, he can't afford to have those values. CEOs have a very narrow perspective, and whatever their values are, they can't afford to incorporate them in their decisions, and that's what Paul Martin is. The best way of looking at Paul Martin in the context of deep integration, I think, is to see him as someone who has restructured Canada and prepared it for sale to the United States. He, in fact, has taken a nation, I mean, a lot of help from Brian Mulroney, obviously, but he's taken a nation and turned it into a company. And if you look at the history of what Paul Martin did as finance minister, that's essentially what he's done. He has gradually eliminated the elements of Canada that 2 generations of nation builders put together, and he will undoubtedly, in my view, continue to do this. He is, I think, without question, the most dangerous prime minister Canada will have had, certainly in the post-war period. I think Brian Mulroney was awful, in part because he liked to please powerful people. Paul Martin's awful because he's awful. His first job, it's not bad getting your first job as the vice president of Power Corporation, right? He says he earned his money. Well, you know, not that many people get appointed vice president of one of the largest corporations as their first job. But his job was to go and restructure companies, right? We're part of this conglomerate and fix them up. And we know what that means. It means lay off a lot of people, sort of chop off the extraneous parts of the company and get down to its core operation and then move on. And that's what Paul Martin did to Canada as finance minister. His 95 budget, which was the watershed budget of the, in some ways, of the last 20 years, really, was mostly known for the huge cuts to social programs. 40% of the federal contribution to social programs was cut, compared to 25% over 9 years by Brian Mulroney. So he outdid Mulroney by a considerable margin. But the most, in some ways, the most important thing that that Paul Martin did was he essentially eliminated the legislation that was the most critical and important nation-building legislation in Canada. Two pieces, both of them fairly boring sounding. One was established program funding, and one was the Canada Assistance Plan. The first one gave Ottawa power over the money transferred to the provinces for health and education. In other words, it said, here's money for health and education. You spend it on that, or you don't get the money. Real simple. I mean, that's how you do nation building in a country in which the federal government has most of the taxing power, but the provinces have the jurisdiction. That's how we got Medicare. How do you have national Medicare in a country where the provinces have jurisdiction over it? Well, you bribe them. You say, hey, we'll pay you 50% of your Medicare costs if you join this Medicare program. So that even Alberta, which was hostile to public Medicare, it was an offer they couldn't refuse, right? It was so much money, they took it. So that's how you do nation building, and that's what established program funding did. And and welfare was covered under the Canada Assistance Plan. Well, if Paul Martin was really concerned about the deficit, he didn't have to touch those two pieces of legislation, but he did touch them. In fact, he got rid of them and replaced them with the Canada Health and Social Transfer, which was a lump sum of money, which the provinces could spend any way they wanted. And it's important to know that one of the neoliberal principles of downsizing democracy is decentralization. You keep moving important programs down the line of government until you get to the weakest government that has the least power and the least money. And so really what the deficit was for Paul Martin was a useful crisis. It forced him to do what he wanted to do. There were other aspects of the budget that are even less known, probably. You know, there were huge cuts right across across the government, but people sort of assume, well, you know, all the departments got cut the same. But in fact, it was the nation-building departments, regional development, industrial development, the environment, fisheries, agriculture, transportation. All of those departments got cut between 40 and 60%. When you cut something 60%, you essentially kill it. You cannot carry out your mandate if you've had your budget cut 60%. So we have these all kinds of nice-looking laws in the book, but there's no one there, you know, to enforce them. It's like Mexican environmental law. You wouldn't expect to find a scrap of paper on a Mexican street if you read the Mexican environmental law, but there's no one in the environment department. So the law doesn't work very well. So essentially what Paul Martin did was take the nation building out of the federal government, which is the only government that can do nation building. In terms of the economy, we're thinking of, you know, how is he preparing Canada for integration or assimilation into the States? And he said in that 95 speech that essentially the only economic policy that Canada would have would be trade and free trade. So that's why you essentially got rid of regional development and industrial development, because those were focused, you know, on the whole economy and on the regions of Canada. So it was focused on the idea that we were not just an economy, but we were a nation. And during the 90s, and I remember Maud telling a story about how bureaucrats keep referring to countries, the APEC countries, as economies. And Maud would say, countries, and they'd say, economies. And there was this debate. They refused to call Canada a country. And this is not an accident. I mean, this is their training, right? I don't know where they go for this, but they're obviously trained. The other aspect of this is it foreign policy. And Canada used to be known for, you know, progressive policies right across the board, not only foreign policy, but environmental policy and anti-poverty. All of these policies Canada was known for internationally as being a progressive country. In fact, moderating in some ways the impact of the United States. Now what we see, no matter what conference it is, whether it's the environment or health or poverty, who do they send? They don't send experts on environment, health, and poverty. They send trade people. Everything is trade. Everything is filtered through the trade filter. And if it doesn't promote trade, if it's not good for trade, it doesn't happen. And so they're always on the lookout for anything that might undermine Canada as an economy rather than as a country.